Okay, hello and welcome to the Alex and Nick film podcast with me, Alex, and him, Nick.
Sup.
So, first things first, The Dictator.
We saw it.
We saw it last night, Sacha Baron Cohen's new comedy. It hadn't been getting great word of mouth. From what I'd heard, is the buzz before its release wasn't great. And I remember watching
it's pushed quite a lot, seen by the cinemas. Like, they've got the whole, sort of the big sort of photos of him in a big sort of fake gilded frame around everywhere and done up like that, but it doesn't actually seem to be, and seen the trailer that many times.
I thought the trailers that did come out didn't look particularly funny. I wasn't massively impressed. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but you know, it looked quite kind of, I hesitate to imply that his comedy is subtle, but you know, even for him it was kind of quite broad, and you know, the punchlines just seemed to be kind of being offensive for the sake of but you know, I thought it was actually very funny. You know,
I think
much better than I thought it was.
It's the funniest Sacha Baron Cohen film I've seen. I thought it was a lot funnier. I haven't seen Bruno.
No.
But I thought it was funnier than Borat and Ali G.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was never a massive fan of Borat because a lot of it is kind of the humour derives from humiliating real people. And I know that, you know, the whole thing is some of them bring it on themselves and stuff, but I always find that kind of a bit painful to watch when I know these are real people.
I think sometimes it works, like if you've ever seen Chris Morris's Brass Eye or The Day to Day, those were amazing. But that was more TV style comedy, and that was a parody of itself rather than being a film. I don't know if it really worked as a film.
Yeah, so, but this one is, it's more of a conventional comedy, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Other than it being kind of offensive and...
It's very edgy.
Yeah, but it still follows quite a kind of a normal comedy route. I wouldn't say it's particularly outlandish in its structure. But you know, I thought it was very good. I mean, it's one of those real, the whole cinema was cracking up constantly. Yeah. I mean, this was definitely not one of those comedies where some people got the joke, some people didn't. I mean, you know, most of the jokes hit. And, you know, there were very few misses in there. There was only once or twice where kind of the joke fell flat. I thought it was very entertaining, much better than I thought it would be.
I think it's one of the only times that I've seen so many people laugh within 3 seconds of the film starting.
Yes, it's true.
The opening frame is hilarious.
But I mean, the whole it stays quite consistently strong as well, because with a lot of comedies, you get the kind of third act blues where, you know, the character goes into his kind of figuring out what he's done wrong stage, and the laughs kind of fade a bit. But here, you know, it seemed to keep the tone quite strong throughout, and I think they did really well with that.
Well, I was thinking about this, and I reckon it's because it really changes the setting so much. Because, I mean, from the trailer, I suppose it's technically a spoiler, but it's in the trailer, so...
Yeah.
It starts off, he's the dictator, and you get the humour of him just being the ridiculous, over-the-top dictator. And then it's got a bit of the humour of him arriving in America.
Yeah.
That doesn't last too long, but then... It switches to him having going to the bottom and
Classic kind of fish out of water.
And then you get that humour, and then you get it back up to he's got a plan, and then it's sort of, you know, almost Johnny English-esque the way it's going wrong for him.
I think he does very well to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I thought it was a really interesting balancing act, because he basically, his character is, to all intents and purposes, a monster. I mean, you know, and yet, you feel like for me, I was certainly kind of rooting for him throughout, despite the fact that his plans are so, you know, selfish and potentially devastating for the rest of his country.
And the world.
And yet, you know, obviously, Sacha Baron Cohen is, you know, an excellent actor, and he does really well with this kind of thing. And he just manages to make it so, I think it's so crazy that you can't help but be carried along with it and enjoy the ride. And they do take care to never make him too, like, unforgivably bad, in the sense that we're not going to go into spoilers, but there are several little twists involved that kind of dilute the fact that he could be potentially evil, you know, and irrevocably evil. So
he was still going in with the evil intention.
Yeah, this is true, but I felt that the fact that sometimes it wasn't carried through makes a big difference. I thought, you know, there were lots of quite big supporting actors as well. We had
John C. Reilly,
Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they had limited screen time. It was definitely kind of, you know, the dictator was the central character massively.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it was his show, essentially. And that's fair enough. But yeah, it meant that I felt that a lot of the supporting characters didn't quite have enough space to shine.
Possibly.
They didn't really, need it, because obviously Cohen has so much.
He fills the screen.
Yeah, you know, his presence is enough to carry everything.
One of the most hilarious supporting characters is a Chinese ambassador, though. He won't tell you why.
He got a lot of big laughs, didn't he? Yeah. And then you had a couple of sneaky celebrity cameos in there as well. Again, we won't spoil them for you, but there are a couple waiting there.
What will be interesting, though, is how well it holds up in 5, maybe 10 years, because a lot of the things, especially a big monologue towards the end, are very sort of current affairs, almost satirical remarks.
Oh, I mean, yeah, some of the final bits are deeply satirical, and I feel like it won't age well. I think it's the kind of thing where, in 5 years, I mean, obviously it's come out at pretty much the perfect time because of the Arab Spring and, you know, this whole thing where, a lot of dictators are being taken down, and you feel like maybe in 5 years it won't be topical anymore. But, you know, this is the risk that so many comedies run, and it might be that it turns out that we remember things like the Arab Spring well enough that even in 5 years, the humour still works. And I mean, a lot of it is still kind of comedy that works regardless. So, you know, I don't think the whole film is going to suffer from that. It might just be a couple of jokes, a couple of scenes. You know, Kim Jong-il has a couple of jokes based around him. And, you know, it's not like he died a week ago or something, you know.
True.
And that's
the they still reference Saddam.
Yeah, so I think it... I think it probably won't hold up brilliantly, but I don't think it'll be the kind of film where, after a year, it just pretty much makes no sense. Like, sometimes, you know, obviously TV example, with Family Guy.
Yeah.
There are a lot of episodes now that I watch, and the people that they're joking about, it was a 15 minutes of fame kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, at the time they made the episode, it was big news, and I don't even know who they are anymore. You know, so there's... And they haven't aged well at all.
For example, like I didn't get to see the film in the end, but The Three Stooges.
Oh, yes.
I was reading a review, and there's apparently quite a large section that involves the entire cast of Jersey Shore.
Oh, yes, we saw that in the trailer, didn't we?
I don't think that will hold up. I hope it doesn't hold up if people still remember who the idiots from Jersey Shore are in a few years.
I think this is a lot of the problems we get with these kind of comedies, is you have to tread that line, because you can get the potential for big laughs out of it. But there's that thing of pushing it too far, like having an entire cast or, you know, an entire group heavily involved.
I think that might be one of the reasons why something like Anchorman still holds up so well, is because it's set in the past.
I think,
setting it sort of back in time, then any references have to be something that's lasted 20 years from the 80s anyway.
But even then, I can't think of many things in Anchorman that are particularly...
But if they did do any, it would still have to be from the 80s. To fit, or it'd be just weird and anachronistic.
I mean, if you look at a lot of the kind of comedies from even further back, like Airplane.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if there are references, I wouldn't know them. But so many of the jokes don't need any prior knowledge to kind of that history or the affairs of the time. And so it still holds up. This is Spinal Tap is another.
Yeah, that's still
just because I watched it recently, I remember it quite well. You know, again... As long as you understand the kind of rock bands and stuff and you know about them, it's not based on, you know, particular rock bands so deeply that the time they've been forgotten means that the whole film falls apart without it. You know, so I think that sometimes is the difference between a comedy that holds up for decades and a comedy that, one, is good, you know, and I think The Dictator is a good comedy. Maybe it won't hold up so well. But on the other hand, talking about dictators will hold up a lot better than talking about reality TV stars.
Yeah, almost.
So, you know,
it's a sad time in our society if people remember Jersey Shore more than Bin Laden.
Yeah. So, but one thing I was thinking about, we were talking about the cameos, is kind of the spoiler culture behind comedies. Because I was reading a review in one of the newspapers of The Dictator, which mentioned a lot of the funny scenes of the film. But some of them came from quite late in the film. And while they weren't spoilers for the plot, knowing some of the jokes were coming meant that it didn't have so much of an impact when they arrived on screen. And I thought it was interesting that kind of you have this, you know, how do you deal with that kind of thing? Do you, when you're trying to talk about a comedy film, but you can't talk about the key areas of comedy unless you do it in broad strokes. I mean, how do you deal with that kind of thing?
It's tricky, I guess.
Do you just say, you know, it's very funny, talk about the jokes maybe from the trailer, but then leave the rest? Because for The Dictator, there were jokes to do with kind of his time in New York and stuff like that, which I could then see it coming when I was watching the film and knew this particular scene was going to arrive. So whereas everyone else was kind of shocked, it was still funny, but I knew it was coming. So.
Reviewing comedy in general, though, it must be so much harder because, like, an action film, you can praise the special effects, the writing, the cinematography, and some more arty films, probably the easiest one to review because you can say it's sort of objectively the cinematography is amazing, but comedy is such a subjective thing
To
what you find, you know, hilarious or not. So it's harder to review anyway.
I think this goes some way to explaining kind of the fact that The Dictator had such negative early buzz is that depending on the people you ask, some people will find utterly tasteless and crass, and you know, and it's definitely not subtle or, you know, PC or anything like that. So I can see a lot of people really having issues, especially with kind of some of the race jokes. You know, he treads a very narrow line between, and he gets away with it because, you know, he's a very clever man. He knows how to tread that line. But, you know, I can imagine some people not being happy with some of the subject matter he deals with.
Like, didn't he do the big leaving speech for Harvard one year? And
yes, where he came as Ali G to the Harvard graduation speech. I feel like, it was kind of one of those things where, again, it was a 50-50 split where some people thought he was hysterical, and then some people, you know, basically thought he'd ruined one of the biggest days of their lives. Yeah. But that's the problem with comedy. But you just feel like, what can you do with the review, you know? Because they're not really spoiling the plot.
No.
So they're spoiling the jokes, but it's quite difficult.
The plot isn't the important thing. A comedy, it's the jokes are much more important than the plot.
And I suppose with reviews of comedies, it's the genre where reviews probably hold the least weight.
Mm.
You know, there are comedy films. I'm thinking of like films like Epic Movie and Disaster Movie, which relentlessly get bad reviews, and for me, are just abysmal.
Yet.
Millions of people watch them and love them, you know, and I know people that think they're hysterical, and yes, it gives me a worse opinion of them as people, but the point is that
you judge them,
you know. They are popular and people genuinely think they're funny, and so what can you do? You know, you can't really say no, it's not, you're wrong, and it's that kind of it's very tricky to deal with. The Dictator, good comedy. If you like his earlier work, it's, you know, definitely check it out. If you don't, still check it out because I didn't and I thought it was funny. So
I'm not saying it's not offensive or not. I'd say it was more subtle than Borat.
Oh yes, but probably at the same time, less kind of groundbreaking.
In the
sense that Borat was definitely something, well, for me, something fresh. Even though I didn't really like it, I could appreciate that.
Oh,
it was different from a lot.
This is more of a conventional thing.
This is definitely a more conventional comedy. It's still edgy.
Yeah,
it's on the edgy end of the comedy spectrum.
But more edgy in the actual sort of what they're saying rather than the whole concept.
Oh, yeah, no, in terms of structure and stuff, it's very, quite conventional. But yes, no, a lot of fun, worth looking at. All right, moving on.
I don't know if it's a worldwide thing or just our terrible cinema, but all the trailers before it were old trailers. For films that still haven't come out yet, but sort of the first
the
trailer.
Trailers for it was strange. It didn't quite understand. I don't quite know how that happened. Maybe it's a mystery we'll never understand.
Although almost every trailer was a film I wanted to see.
Yeah, there was Men in Black 3, wasn't there?
The Hobbit.
I don't think. Yeah, I'm not so keen on Men in Black. The Hobbit, obviously, you know, will be very exciting.
Dark Knight Rises. Rock of Ages.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
I'm not a massive fan of musicals, so it's got a very good cast though, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because got Tom Cruise,
Alec Baldwin,
Russell Brand, Catherine Zeta-Jones, then you've got the two kind of more unknown actors as the kind of lead couple, but very strong supporting cast. And it's kind of, the soundtrack's 80s music, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Def Leppard, Twisted Sister, that kind of thing.
Mm. Well, it'd be interesting to see if that catches on, because obviously there's been so much success with, you know, Mamma Mia and stuff. Obviously, it's a very successful musical in the theatre, but I wonder if the audience will be there for this film. As in, do you think kind of people want to see a kind of 80s nostalgia thing? Because Mamma Mia, you've got ABBA, which is kind of one of the few absolute guarantees of dance floor action is putting on ABBA. You know, that's kind of, someone said, you know, that even if you're a guy and you hate ABBA, you've got to thank them for the fact that you can guarantee getting a dance with the girl you want to dance with if you put some ABBA on. And so there's that kind of element to it where it's undeniably catchy. Now, obviously the 80s songs in the trailer are, you know, they're well known, they're catchy, but I just wonder whether they're so iconic or kind of memorable that they would bring in the audience. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen the musical.
No, I haven't seen it.
But
I'd have thought, I mean, it's probably got a better cast than that one.
I don't know. When you have Meryl Streep, you've got you've got obviously Piers Brosnan, Colin Firth.
I'd say Tom Cruise was more famous than all of those.
But then again, Meryl Streep is one of the few powerhouse actors of the generation. And I suppose you also have the young up and comers like Amanda Seyfried, and Dominic Cooper, who were kind of, you know, you recognise them as well. I don't know, but I think the other thing is Mamma Mia kind of, I don't know, it just because of the picturesque setting and stuff, is the Rock of Ages is more grungy kind of.
It's set in a club.
Yeah, dark and.
It's not that dark, it's still glamour.
I know it's kind of still going to be feel good and stuff, but from the comparing the trailers side by side, I don't know whether it would bring in the kind of wide audience, especially kind of the female audience, which Mamma Mia really captured.
Mm.
I don't know whether Rock of Ages would bring that in the same way. And obviously, I don't think Tom Cruise's star shines as brightly anymore as, you know, people like Meryl Streep still do. I mean, obviously, he's still utterly recognisable, but is he the kind of person who will single-handedly bring people in?
I had a thought, so if I think A-list, I still think sort of Tom Cruise is like the A-star of the A-list.
Yeah, I just remember there was the whole thing with Mission Impossible 4 where they were worried that his name would actually drive people away.
Oh, right.
Obviously, it ended up they were wrong. But, you know, if it's got to that point, can he truly be said to be a box office draw? I mean, what's the most recent film he's come out with? Was it Mission Impossible 4? Because that made a lot of money. But, you know, he had a strong supporting cast with that. I'm just wondering whether he's still... I mean, I agree. I think he's still one of the few actors where, you know, along with Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt, where, you know, their names...
You can guarantee everyone's heard of
them. Yeah, everyone knows who they are. So, you know, and they really played that up with the trailer, with the kind of slow reveal of him being in it. You know, so... We'll have to see, I guess. And the other, headlining actors is Will Smith with Men in Black.
Yeah.
Because he kind of, there was a period where, you know, he was the big, one of the biggest blockbuster drawers. I think he was the biggest.
Yeah, with iRobot and I Am Legend.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of those actors where you could guarantee a certain amount of money just by him being in it. Yeah. Men in Black 3, to me, looks like a bit of a mess. I mean, I think it'll probably be entertaining. And you've got Josh Brolin doing an uncannily good Tommy Lee Jones accent. But, you know, it'll be very interesting to see because Will Smith has put a lot of kind of attention to his children and, you know, with their film career as well, you know, Jaden Smith. And in fact, he's starring with Jaden Smith in M. Night Shyamalan's new film. So the kind of father and son team up there as well. So I wonder if he's kind of, he hasn't been on screens for a while.
No.
I mean,
he's, as I understand, I think he's written a lot of Men in Black 3 as well, hasn't he?
He's definitely improvised a lot of the lines, like he was coming up with them. That's caused problems.
He brought the concept in as well.
Oh, did he? Okay.
I read somewhere that he brought the concept to the director in the studio, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how successful Men in Black 2 was financially, but obviously Men in Black 1 was
did quite well, I think.
Yeah. But it's obviously been quite a long time. I mean, it's
10 years since the second one.
10 years since the second one. I mean, that wasn't, you know, as well regarded in any sense by, you know, as Men in Black 1. It's been 15 years, I think, since Men in Black 1. So
it's got to be almost there.
It'll be interesting to see how people respond to it. You know, I could see it being equally quite a big hit and you know, a relatively big flop. It could be. I could see it being a flop as well. I just think a lot of the production looks quite cheap. Like, I know that the whole thing is kind of very slick, futuristic design, but kind of, I couldn't help but get the feeling that a lot of it looked a bit, you know, iffy. Certainly not bad, but for the budget it supposedly had, which was by no means a kind of shoestring budget, didn't look particularly, I couldn't really see where the money had gone. If and not obviously the salaries of, the kind of cast, because they got, you know, a strong leads, but yeah, I guess we'll have to see. I mean, that's coming out quite soon as well, but
isn't it? It's out this week.
And the early buzz hasn't been fantastic. But then again, Dictator didn't have great early response either. So, you know, you can't really tell with that. But yeah, we'll probably have to see how that one goes.
I saw X-Men First Class for the first time.
Oh, yes, you did, didn't you? Yes. What do you think?
It's pretty good. Yeah, I thought it was. It seemed to hold together a bit better than probably the last standard.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that one.
Yeah, I really liked the sort of portrayal of the characters as young. I was a little confused by the sort of canonicalness. Canonicity? What's the...
it's not... I think they've played it fast and loose with canon, haven't they? I mean, I definitely think they kind of forgot about Last Stand. And sorry. They definitely abandoned Origins, Wolverine Origins.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is fair enough. You know, I don't think that should be so... Forget that. I'm not sure with the rest of it. Obviously, there are some discrepancies, aren't there? Like, Mystique's relationship with Professor X is certainly never mentioned in any of the other films, despite the fact it's quite a major thing here. But, I mean, you know, what do you think of the cast, first of all?
I thought they were all really good,
You know...
Fassbender was great. There was a couple of moments when his Irish accent...
he still struggles, doesn't he, to hold it back, especially when he shouts... Yeah. At the end, it becomes very noticeable.
At the scene on the beach, he went really Irish and but yeah, the cast on the whole was pretty good. Mm. It was odd. I know some of the comic book stories, and it was weird seeing characters, and it sort of it doesn't fit with the comic. Mm. I mean, I know they never completely fit with canon anyway, because it's so convoluted. Yeah. But say, like, Havoc is Cyclops' younger brother.
Yeah.
Yet. He's there with Professor X at age 20-something.
I think they have just kind of taken it, you know, done what they wanted, which I think is fine. Yeah. You know, if you're making a good film, then canon can take second place to it, I imagine.
Whereas, definitely.
The other thing I liked was how they integrated, you know, some of the stuff that you might have imagined might be a bit too goofy for film. Like, I remember with X-Men, the original ones, they didn't want to have the yellow jumpsuits because they didn't want it to look, because they thought it looked too silly. So they had that kind of black leather get up. In fact, they made a joke in the first film about it where Wolverine says, you know, what would you prefer, yellow spandex or something like that? But here I thought, you know, they brought back the yellow and I thought they did it quite well. So you had those kind of elements that the other films hadn't really wanted to go for, but they managed to bring some of that in and done it quite well. I also thought the humour was very good in X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of the other X-Men films being particularly funny, but this had a couple of good bits in it. It had the little cameo. I think we can spoil it now. You know, Wolverine's cameo is
Singleton F word there allowed.
Yeah, you're allowed. Yeah, the one F bomb. I thought it was excellent. I mean, I saw it when it came out, and I thought it was thoroughly entertaining. And sets up a strong basis for further films, and they are making. They've green-lighted X-Men First Class 2, haven't they?
But they're also doing Wolverine Origins 2, aren't they?
Well, they're doing. I think it's a standalone film.
Oh right.
It's disappointing that one, isn't it? Because they were going to have Darren Aronofsky, who did Black Swan, Fountain, Requiem for a Dream, and they were going to have him, obviously Hugh Jackman, shooting in Japan. Doing what most people consider to be one of Wolverine's best stories, which is when he's in Japan, basically as a samurai, and then and they were going to do it, and it sounded fantastic. Since Aronofsky then left the project because of the disaster, the tsunami in Japan,
right,
which obviously delayed matters severely. But then they've got a new director on board, Jason Mangold, I think his name is.
Right.
I'm not massively familiar with his work. I'll probably have to check that a bit later, but. They're still shooting in Japan, though, and obviously they've still got Hugh Jackman on board, but it'll be interesting to see if that is a good film. Obviously, I'm less interested now that Aronofsky is off, because he has a very kind of unique way of doing things. But yeah, so they've got that. I mean, the question is, are they going to integrate this together? because, you know, you've got Marvel's canon. Will X-Men First Class stand alone from Wolverine? I hope it will, in a sense.
Yeah.
I feel like the Wolverine film could be done so well as just a standalone film that can just, you know, doesn't have to have an overarching story or anything like that.
Well, they could almost do it, not on the same scale as the Avengers, but do it as a similar thing, so he has his own film and just have a little cameo at the end from McAvoy or something.
Mm.
And then, so Wolverine can show up in First Class 2 or 3 at some point. Probably not as a main character, yeah, but show up as in one of the fights. Or...
I suppose I was hoping that the Wolverine film would take a very different tone, in a sense. I was kind of, especially with Aronofsky, I don't know how they're going to do it now, but I was hoping to see him maybe a more serious, maybe much more violent. I was even hoping for kind of 15 maybe rated. Obviously, they could never go for 18, but for kind of 15 rated Wolverine. Where, you know, yeah, the fact that he, you know, has blades out of his hands could be used to the full.
They did an 18-rated Wolverine game.
They did, didn't they? Yes, the Origins one.
They released the uncaged edition.
I think that it works slightly differently, doesn't it, with video games, where, you know, kids, it's quite easy for kids to buy an 18-rated game, whereas getting into an 18-rated film is a bit trickier. But, yeah, I don't think they could roll with that. But they could certainly, I was hoping they could do a 15. I'm not convinced they'll be going for that now.
I think if they did a sort of darker superhero, I think Deadpool would be the one they'd have to go for.
Well, yeah, that's been trying to get off the ground for a long time, hasn't it? I mean, Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, a lot of people were a fan of him at the start in Origins, you know, before he gets butchered. And kind of they turn him bald and sew up his mouth. But from the kind of people who have read the comics, they seem to say it was... You know, he had a lot of potential there. You know, I've never read any Deadpool comics, so I have no idea. But, you know, the script is supposed to be excellent. But Robert Rodriguez was on board to direct, which I thought would be a potentially good
Rodriguez
choice.
Would be able to handle it quite well.
But unfortunately, yeah, it would be an 18, and, you know, you're not going to get a huge return on your budget with an 18-rated film. I can't think of many that have been massive financial successes.
I think the hard thing with Deadpool is that the comics are so much based around, like, breaking the fourth wall.
Oh, yes.
And Deadpool,
true,
like, directly addressing the reader and stuff. And it's sort of... I don't know how well that would translate to to a darker, more serious film.
I don't think it would be a serious film. I think it would be dark, but very much kind of black comedy, in a sense. Yeah. Like, kind of, you know, not quite the perfect comparison, but in the same way, like, something like Kick-Ass was kind of very bloody, very violent, but not in any, by any means mature, you know, kind of irreverent, you know, bouncing off the walls kind of thing. That's how I envisioned it, but, you know, yeah, even more so, even more crazy and out there. But sadly, you know, it's the kind of combination of things that just doesn't seem to be able to get off the ground, where, you know, you have heavy violence, unconventional way of telling the story, with the fourth wall breaking, you have not a small budget, you know, we're not talking 200 million, but, you know, it's going to be big enough that an 18 probably wouldn't recuperate the money.
No.
So it seems unfortunately unlikely that I'll ever see the light of day, unless it's watered down or something.
Speaking of Rodriguez there, Machete Kills and Sin City 2.
Yes, he suddenly, you know, in classic Rodriguez style, just announces everything.
Filming at the end of this year.
Yeah, Sin City 2 is coming out October 2013.
Yeah, he's filming Machete Kills first over the end of this summer, I think he said.
Oh, right.
And then pretty much going straight into Sin City 2 after that. He said there might even be some overlap with the filming.
Yeah, because, he certainly doesn't, he's not a sluggish man when it comes to filming. But yes, it's only just over a year until Sin City 2 will be coming out, which is incredible considering it was only like, people didn't even think it existed until, like, a month ago. The only thing I'm concerned about is, on the poster, if I remember correctly now, I could embarrass myself here, because I can't remember if this was the official poster or if it was the real poster, but I'm pretty sure it was the official one, and it said directed by Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller.
Now, Frank Miller's involved, yeah.
Now, I'm a little bit worried, because Frank Miller directed The Spirit, which was a terrible film, and, you know, I'm a little bit concerned by his involvement in this. That recently there was that whole, he kind of flipped out a bit, there was that big meltdown he had where he shouted about possibly a comic, he just had this massive rant, and it was vaguely racist, or maybe even more than vague, I can't quite remember, and a lot of people were just like, oh, you know, he's kind of losing it a bit. And I'm a little bit concerned that the fact that he's not a good director, the fact that he's involved enough to be put on the poster right next to Rodriguez.
I don't think Rodriguez would let him screw it up, though. I think Rodriguez is, from the way his films are, it doesn't seem like he really listens to sort of people saying, that's not how you should do it. It's, I'm going to do it my way. That's how I want to do my film. Like Machete just wouldn't get made with someone that was going to listen to something else.
True.
So I think Rodriguez, he'll probably take, you know, he'll listen to Frank Miller. It's his, he created the whole thing. But if Frank Miller says something stupid, I hope that Rodriguez would sort of have the guts to say, no, you're wrong.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping that it's a courtesy thing where he's directing in the sense that he'll be behind the camera, but Robert Rodriguez will be pulling the strings, as it were, and kind of making sure he doesn't do anything terrible. But we shall see. I mean, yeah, I always like it when you get these kind of big surprises coming out where, kind of not very long ago, Sin City 2 was just a pipe dream. And then suddenly it was a, a reality. It's just come out of nowhere. And just...
I also think it's quite fitting for Machete to get the sequel because the whole thing of where the film came from was the trailer at the start of Planet Terror.
Yeah.
Then the film got made, and then it was the joke of having the sequel at the end was Machete kills and Machete kills again.
Yeah.
And now that's getting made as well.
So. Yeah, and you got Mel Gibson starring Machete Kills?
I don't know if he's starring. He's been confirmed.
He's on the poster. Not starring it, but, being in it.
Still Danny Trejo is confirmed again for that.
Yeah. I always like it when you have kind of actors like, Mel Gibson, controversial actors playing it up. Like in the same way that Tom Cruise did in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Having a bit of kind of fun in a kind of in a more outlandish film.
Well, like to some extent some of the characters in The Expendables.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, Expendables 2 is coming out, yeah. Ah, good thinking. Expendables was a guilty pleasure for me. I know a lot of people didn't like it, and I think it became fashionable not to like it.
Yeah.
But I thought, for what it was, I don't understand how anyone could be disappointed with what we got. Like, we got exactly what was promised. And,
explosions.
Yeah, and the second one looks like more of the same, which is surely what we all wanted again.
Have any of the main actors left? Because they've definitely added some new ones.
They've added a lot of new ones. They've got Chuck Norris, they've got Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yeah. Obviously, Arnold Schwarzenegger is getting a bigger role, and so is Bruce Willis. Yeah. They got Liam Hemsworth from Hunger Games. He's coming in as a kind of a young rookie sniper or sniper of some sort. I think they're kind of downgrading people like Terry Crews from the first one. Right. Like he doesn't feature heavily in the trailer. Maybe that's just because they've got so many new characters to cram in, but maybe they'll kind of push him more to the background now that they have more conventional action stars in the sense that, the 80s guys that are back in business. It seems to be bringing exactly what I wanted it to bring, which is more explosions, more action stars, more fighting. I don't see how anyone could be particularly disappointed by it.
But I was just thinking, and this is going to sound completely ridiculous, and I'm fairly confident it would never happen, but would the Avengers motivate them to do their own individual films?
Yeah,
I don't think team up as the Expendables.
I think the problem is, you probably wouldn't be strong enough to have a standalone film with Terry Crews just busting heads.
I'd watch it.
But I think kind of the strength of the Expendables is in the fact that you have this kind of, it's all just, whoa, these different action stars all fighting each other and teaming up. Obviously, the other thing is that the Expendables doesn't really have a particularly strong plot.
No.
So it's not like you could have a kind of deep characterful film with just Sylvester Stallone doing loads of emotional stuff. I feel like they're playing to their strengths as it is already with the big team.
Are there any major
up.
Action stars that aren't in it? That I can't really think of any of the same kind of calibre in that style of film.
I mean, the thing is, these are the old-fashioned action stars. Yeah. Like, a lot of people say that Jason Statham is probably the last old-fashioned action
star. I'm trying to think of any of that kind of class that's
around now. There are people like Steven Seagal. Never been a huge fan of him, but a lot of people are. And I suppose there are people like him who aren't in it, but they've got.
I wasn't a huge fan of him. And I saw Machete and thought he was.
Oh right, yes, he's amazing. Yeah, but no, they've definitely got an absolutely stellar cast. I don't approve of Chuck Norris being in there. But then the internet has turned me against him. I mean, I was never. I mean, I didn't think he was great, but I was never particularly didn't care about him. But after the internet's kind of relentless jokes about it, I'm tired of him now. So, but oh well, what are you going to do? Sorry, going back to we moved on quite quickly from First Class.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to have another point there, which is with Jennifer Lawrence, she's contracted for 3 X-Men, and obviously now she's signed up for Hunger Games. And I was just thinking of what a contrast it must be for her in terms of how she must look forward to Hunger Games so much more. Because if you think about the kind of the different roles she has, in one of them she's the lead actress in a global
huge
franchise that
film.
everyone is successful, both critically and commercially, massively successful. And then in X-Men, she must spend like 6 hours a day in the makeup chair to get her mystique stuff, on. And then she's a supporting character. I mean, I just feel it's...
The X-Men franchise is pretty huge, though.
It is. I mean, it's big, but she's the lead. She's the face of Hunger Games, and it's brought her up into the kind of, pretty much the A-list of actresses in the sense that, she's so recognisable now.
She is called Catnip, though. Which is always a downside.
I know people who very little interest in general films, but they now recognise her because she's Katniss, and they read the books, they went to see the film. And like we were saying before, with Avengers being one of the films where even people who don't go to the cinema much will go and see it. Hunger Games, I think, was that as well, where people who didn't really see the films but had read the books, that was one of the few films they have gone to see this year. And so they recognise her as well, And she's got a horror film coming out, so she's doing quite a range of
busy
stuff. She is a very busy woman.
Because they put back the filming of First Class too.
Yes.
So she can do the
Hunger Games, yeah. Alrighty, I think that's everything for today.
Yeah.
I think we'll call it a day there. Nice. Quite a long podcast. So
yeah.
Well done, everyone. You all got a...
well done for getting this
one. Yeah, well done for making it to the end. And we'll see you in a couple of days, I guess, or when something big and exciting happens in the film world. All right, excellent. See you later.